Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, April 7th. I'm Ray Graff. It's 112 degrees in Studio A, and our favorite bird experts are back. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are here to share their birding knowledge and expert information about birds, and it feels tropical. So if you have tropical bird questions, feel free. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org for your email bird questions, 800-348-2551 for your phone bird questions. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart, your birding questions. We'll take a break for news. I'm going to get hosed down, and then we'll come back to the very sunny tropical studio and do the show. Oh, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's birds today. And when we talk birds, we welcome avian experts Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. Julie is the project coordinator of the New York Breeding Bird Atlas, and she coordinates with thousands of volunteers to document bird breeding behavior. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He's constantly traveling the nation. We never know where he is. He's the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. He's here today, though, in Studio A, and this is great news. If you have a birding question for our dynamic duo, let's do it. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Julie Hart, it's cooling down a little bit in here.
It is.
Boy,
it's nice.
Wasn't it hot when we walked
in? It was
in?
Like the tropics, yeah.
It was so warm. So we'll see what happens. Rich, you weren't complaining about the heat.
No. In fact, maybe it's my fault. I might have brought it with me.
From Florida or wherever
yes,
you were?
Yes, from way down south.
Key West.
I didn't bring the sunshine, though, unfortunately.
When did you get back to town?
Just last Thursday.
Yeah? Are you enjoying
Friday,
yourself?
Friday.
It's been very nice around here. Weather-wise, it's been great.
I missed the good stuff, didn't I?
Well, it's not that great today, is
no,
it?
No.
We had snow when I was driving to work, so, you know.
We had hail later on.
And gravel.
Yeah, it's been,
good times. Blizzards,
yes, sir.
Frogs and whatnot. All right, so any bird information you want to impart before we get to the questions? We have several emails. We'll do those first.
Well, I'll say that spring is banging on the door.
Yep.
It's coming in despite the weather, and they're here. The red-winged blackbirds and the robins and the birds are migrating through. A whole bunch of goldfinches and purple finches passing through as we speak. Showed up this morning and yesterday at our bird feeders.
Yep, I've been having purple finches the last few days as well.
But they're
Delmar.
Not really purple, right?
Yeah, they
no,
are.
No, well, I don't really think they're purple.
Well,
it's
they're
kind
raspberry
of like a
purple.
Raspberry, yeah.
Raspberry
color. I'll just say a little reminder from last month, I guess, that it is spring. Everyone's starting to breed again. If you haven't already, please clean out your bird houses and make sure you do a deep clean of your feeders.
And how
well.
Do you do that and be safe and not catch anything?
Yeah, so you should be wearing a mask so you're not breathing in any airborne bacteria. You want to have some gloves on and you want to, you know, don't clean your bird feeders in your kitchen sink. We tend to use our bathtub, but if you have like an outdoor sink or like a work sink, that would be the best.
Right.
Or a bucket or something.
Okay.
Use like 10% bleach. Solution and make sure you get all the debris out of there, let them dry off, and then put them back up.
Fair enough. All right. Now, we had a question. I think it was on the science forum last week, one of the shows last week. And I asked the listener, you know, maybe try it during the birding show. And I think this is the one. This is from Mary in Salem. When to mow? I have a 10-acre field that hasn't been used for grazing or haying for at least a decade. 2 years ago, it was brush hogged in late autumn. I'd like to brush hog it again this year with the goal of bringing the field back into grazing land. If I brush hog it now, will I be completely ruining the nesting habitat this year for birds and other critters, or will they come back after the cutting and rebuild again in the summer?
Well, it depends on the bird species that are there. Some, you know, these small brushy fields can be very valuable to some of our bird species that are hungry for the proper habitat of that type. On the other hand, if you want to have field birds, grass birds, then you really don't want to start just yet. You maybe want to let that sit until November like you did the last time.
All summer.
All summer. Mm-hmm. And they'll utilize it. And then certainly by November, they'll be gone. The birds will have fledged.
Don't those little doodle bops or whatever do their dance in the brush?
Yes, they do.
Woodcock.
Yeah, that's right.
Timber doodles.
Right.
And they're doing it now, each evening.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pick a warmer evening to go out, but but do it. It's amazing.
I've never seen that.
Oh.
We'll have
to
get together
at
Five Rivers.
Really?
Yeah, just like in the parking lot at Five Rivers.
And that's a mating ritual, Julie?
Yes. Yeah, that's part of their courtship display, and the females are on the ground kind of watching it, and then the males will fly up and make all these weird sounds and do this aerial
display. What if the dude's a bad dancer? Does he get no action at all?
Right.
Probably.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. And then when he comes back down, he does a turkey-like strut around the female.
Funny.
He's got this long, long bill that he points down and almost scraping the ground, and his tail is up, puffed up like a turkey.
No way.
And they strut around with this kind of weird, why would you call it, kind of a two-step, a Carolina two-step.
Really?
Yes.
I had no idea that you were a dancer. The thing is, though, they're doing this ornate ritual and dancing around. Isn't that an invitation for predators?
Mm-hmm.
They're not focusing, and they're
mm-hmm.
dancing around trying to impress the ladies. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, I'm a fox. I'm on the edge of the clearing. Boom.
Yeah.
Lunch.
Yeah.
Or
or
that owl. And that's, males are dispensable out there.
An owl? Wait, how big are these doodlers?
Smaller than a pigeon.
Okay, so they're not big. An owl could take one.
Oh,
yes.
Sure.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, the number here is 800-348-2551. It's Birds Today with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. All right. This is a tropical question, although it's cooled down significantly now.
It is.
I'm actually getting a little chilly. Nick writes in early March, I was off the coast of Puerto Rico, and one bird followed a large ocean ferry boat I was on. It was so windy that day, I was amazed it could keep up. It also skimmed the water occasionally. Its face looked exactly like the Concorde jet. It's an ugly bird. And I could amazingly see it steering with its head. It was brown, at least a foot long, with narrow wings that looked three times the body size and flapping like at most 2 to 3 times per second, going full speed. After just looking in the Nat Geo field guide of birds, I think it was either an Audubon shearwater, a brown booby juvenile, or red-footed booby. Brown noddy. So is mm-hmm. Nick just making up ridiculous names, or are these actual birds?
Those are real birds.
and he's right on. It could have been any one of those.
Really?
But the likelihood is it was the brown booby.
Okay.
And the shearwater is a name that they earn. They do skim along the surface of the water with magnificent flight. They can glide on a draft of the ship.
Oh, okay.
And take it with it. No work.
Okay. And then Nick says, after that, I saw pelicans fishing up close for the first time. Mm. Quite the spectacle, and quieter than I would expect.
Yeah. Huh. They're not really making any noise. You probably just hear the water splashing as they dove into the water.
Right.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. This
Very
one's
cool.
from James. Will leaving the side door open on a bluebird box deter sparrows from building a nest in it?
They were. Was
might,
that a question?
Might
or
deter that... other bird. It might deter the bluebirds,
I
too,
said,
though.
Will leaving the side door open on a bluebird box. Will leaving the side open door on a blue. Follow along, Rich. Will leaving the side door open on a bluebird box deter sparrows from building a nest in it?
Probably not. On the other hand, leaving that side door open, which is what I do when I clean the boxes out for a little while, to let the air out, to let it air out inside. Especially if you have to evict a few families of mice that spent the winter in there.
Okay. Oh, we're moving on. All right, that's it. Julie, you want to add anything to that?
Well, I did do a little research. You know, we always get questions about bluebird boxes and how to prevent sparrows from taking over, right? So I did go to our local bird supply shop right after I left here last month.
Really?
Actually, yes. And I was like, okay, show me all the deterrents you have for bluebirds and show me all your boxes and talk to me about how to keep the bluebirds away. And what I gathered is, well, one, there's a lot of different things you can try. But basically, the house sparrows will get used to whatever like trick you are using, and then you have to change again. Nice. And so, you know, it's the size or the placement of the hole, the material, the, like, you know, some of them have an open top. There's all kinds of different ways that you can try to deter them, and you can, you know, try it and maybe it'll work for a couple years, and then you may have to switch to another.
Wow. So they're very smart, then.
Yeah, they're smart. They're persistent. Just very tolerant. Yeah.
Okay, now here's a question that'll take us into break time, and then we'll hit the phones. 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie today, it's birding. 800-348-2551. Here's one from Chris. You ready? How far back do feathers go? All right. I'll say it again.
Yep.
How far back do feathers go? Rich.
Well, from head to tail.
All right, Julie.
Assuming he means historically.
I would think.
I would assume
yeah.
Paleontology. I mean, that's how we were able to recognize Archaeopteryx fossils as birds, because they have some feather structures on them. And
yeah.
so they go back at least to Archaeopteryx. I want to say there were some fossils that came out in the last few years that might even be older.
Yes.
100 million years,
right?
Kind of thing.
Over in China, they came up with a few.
I forget what they're called, though.
Oh, no, there's some long name.
Something weird.
Interesting. You know,
yeah, so they go back, yeah.
I thought I saw somewhere, and I don't remember exactly when, and it might have been all imagined, that there was a predator, not a one that was known to be a precursor of birds, but a dinosaur, that like a T-Rex kind of thing. And there was some indication that some of these land-based predators also had feathers, which it's kind of odd.
Well,
I think I heard that too. That was recent, right?
Yeah, I think so. But
that
my memory's
recent.
So bad. I don't know. I read everything.
Yeah, I kind of mush everything together.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And when you look at the structure of some of the lizards out there, some of these scale features, mm-hmm. you know, kind of take edges like feathers. You know, you can see where there's a possibly in another 30 million years or so, it could come out as feathers, but
mm-hmm.
give them time. It takes a while.
Well, that was fun. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Oh, yeah, buddy. It's birding today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. We'll be back and hit the phones. Slim's Walk by The Skinny here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551, our telephone number if you have an important question about birds you want to ask Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. 800-348-2551. Before we go to the phones, Rich, you usually have a list of things. Do you have a list of things?
I actually have a composite list.
All right.
Get out there.
Oh, simple. Okay.
Yes. All right. Because spring is on the way, the leaves are not on the trees, and the fewer birds are showing up, the males will be singing in full view. Now's the time to get on them and learn these guys and gals before they all disappear and go into their nesting mode.
What does the sound of a juvenile screech owl sound like?
Well, the juveniles have sort of like a soft scream. Soft, yeah, yeah.
Ah. Would they be around now, Julie?
Juvies would be basically adults by now.
Okay, so that, yeah. That's not
the
what
next
I heard.
Brood is still in the egg.
Yeah.
Must have been the neighbors that have little kids. All right, let's go to the phones. Carl's in Katona. Carl, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon, Rich, Julie, and Ray. How
Hello.
Are you?
Good. Welcome.
I'm a lifetime birder. I was brought up in the church of Roger Torrey Peterson.
Oh wow!
And I love the Merlin app.
Yeah.
I had the pleasantry of being in southern Spain in the middle of February this year at Costa del Sol. And we visited a little town called Alcalá La Real.
Okay.
And one day I logged birds that I really couldn't believe. A carib grackle, a blue and white swallow, a sciaca tanager, a great kiskadee, and a band-winged nightjar. And I researched them, and these birds come from, or at least are usually seen in South America, Middle America, and even the Caribbean. So the question is, was this a fluke, or did these birds really migrate across the Atlantic?
Yes and no. I don't know how in the world you have found all of those extremely rare in Europe vagrants. Was this all on the same day?
It was all in the same day, in the same morning.
My gosh.
And the birds were just piling in that day. It's
really?
It's a little town between Malaga and Cordoba.
Julie.
In southern Spain.
Were these you visually ID'd them, or did you just get them with Merlin?
We saw a couple of them for real, visually verifying that they were there.
Okay.
The rest of them came in on Merlin. I can't say that I saw them, but I heard them, and then I verified the songs because we had recorded it onto Merlin.
Okay.
So what do you think?
I have no reasonable explanation. Now, I'll go along with one and really maybe two, but that list you just rolled out there, something strange is going on, and it's not natural. That's my take on it. And
maybe you should reinstall the app, Carl.
So Merlin sometimes... Merlin does hallucinate sometimes.
Merlin does hallucinate.
It doesn't always fix your location with the GPS. And so it'll think that you're somewhere else than you actually are. Normally, that's what it does, is it finds your location and then it will filter the birds.
So you need to have your location settings on. Like,
yes.
I usually turn mine off.
It'll filter the birds to your location.
So
that's one thing. And even when you do have it set to your location, sometimes Merlin still pulls from the global data set rather than the local birds.
Interesting.
And the ones
I was...
Go ahead, Carl.
I was loaded with the Iberian Peninsula nugget from Merlin.
Yeah.
Pack. Yeah, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
The two that we saw the Carib grackle, and we did see a Sayaca tanager and a great kiskadee.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The other two or three we didn't see with our eyes, but we heard them. It wasn't an off catch either. These were repetitive calls. So
You got the recordings?
Yes, I do.
Did you get pictures?
Well, he only saw two of them.
No.
Yeah.
No, but no, we didn't snapshot them. No.
Okay. No, the three, the grackle, the carib, and the kiskadee. And
right.
I can't help you with that. I don't have a natural explanation. Birds do wander. They can end up in Europe from the Americas, more likely North America than from South America, and more likely in the other direction.
All right.
We saw two birds that were very familiar to us. There are rock pigeons everywhere in the world, but this particular place had peregrine falcons.
Yeah, that was a worldwide.
We saw those all up and down the Costa del Sol.
Yes, that's not unusual. Neither one of those.
Different.
Okay.
Okay. Well,
yeah,
like take the recordings and see if you could send them to the on eBird, and the reviewer over there in Spain will have a lot of fun with that.
Okay, Carl. Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. It's Birds Today. I got to get me that Merlin app.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
You do.
You don't have it?
No, I'd much rather guess incorrectly in my backyard when I'm listening. Well, that's a great blue owl. David is in Red Hook. Hello, David. You're on.
Hello. Good afternoon, everybody. I just have more of an observation than a question. Month and a half ago, I was out in the driveway doing snow work, and something caught my eye. And I thought at first it was a couple of squirrels chasing each other round and round a fir tree. You know how squirrels do.
Yeah.
But I looked, and it was a hawk chasing a pileated woodpecker.
Wow.
And the pileated woodpecker just kept hopping around the tree. It didn't fly. And this went on for a good, almost a minute. I thought it was really interesting. I mean, if I do have a question, I guess it would be, do pileated woodpeckers read Darwin? Because I thought this was such a clever survival mechanism, you know, because if the bird had flown, he's dead. I didn't have my binoculars, so I can't, you know, I didn't ID the hawk. I don't know if we have northern harriers in Red Hook. It wasn't a Cooper's hawk, but whatever it was fighting a losing game against a very smart pileated woodpecker.
Well, we're off to a surreal start on this show. Is everybody that's hitting the absinthe in, out there? All right, what do you think? Is this possible, people?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although back in my day, we were prohibited to even think that this was a possibility. But I like to think birds have fun. And there was a little...
Come on. The hawk and the pileated woodpecker?
I've watched hawks dive... Hawks are fully capable of taking out a gull in flight, fly through a flock of gulls, and the gulls all separate and come back, and the hawk did a 180 and came back again and again and again.
Okay.
It was a game that could have ended quickly.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
Really?
I do
you think
see,
hawks are jokesters?
I think they just love to see all the other birds fly up. Like a little kid running through a flock of pigeons, it's the same kind of deal.
I think I might be running a temperature. This is just the weirdest show. Hey, David, thanks a lot for that one. This is funny. This is from Suzanne. Merlin often thinks my Irish wolfhound is a mourning dove, for what it's worth.
Oh, nice.
It's understandable.
A little side note, it can be fun. Merlin also does photo ID.
Oh.
And when Merlin first came out, what I used to tell people to do was take a picture of themselves, like take a selfie and see what bird they look like.
Oh, that's funny. What did you look like?
Oh, God, I don't remember. I haven't done it in a long time. Let's do it on the next break. Oh,
I love it. Yeah, let's
go to paradise.
Let's go to Kirsten in Wilton. Kirsten, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a very, we have a bay window in our kitchen, and we have a very sad female cardinal that likes to fly into the window. And I think she's done it. I think she must live nearby, because she's done it several seasons. I think she did it last year, too. So just wondering what we can do to help her not do that anymore.
Yeah, that's a very
common
thing that cardinals do. They think that they're seeing a rival, and males and female cardinals as well are both territorial. So it's seeing its reflection in the window, and then it thinks that it's a competitor, and it's trying to attack its competitor. So what you need to do is break up the reflection on your window. So if you can get either like string or decals or something like that to put on the outside of the window, and then that should help stop.
I'm wrong, Rich, but is there some new technology that basically shows ultraviolet and the birds see that?
Yes, there is. And that's mainly for the purpose of preventing bird window collisions. That's full flight crashes into the window. And that's available through the American Birding Association for suggestions, recommendations, and perhaps purchase. It's a not-for-profit organization. And they do this to promote the safety and survival of birds. Mm. On the other hand, with this cardinal, another possibility, and it might help in the long run, is to take some soap and put dry soap on the window to break down the reflection. For a while, that'll keep the bird. And then
or those markers, right? The markers you can paint on your window.
You can paint markers on there. Mm. And then eventually she'll give up. She'll feel successful and will be too busy nesting to be bothered.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is that good
for
you?
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. Birding today with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. We'll go to South Lee, Massachusetts. Irene, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
I have been feeding birds in my backyard for at least 25 years. I live on the Housatonic, and we just have a wonderful place for a huge collection of songbirds. We are going to be moving in 2 months, so I decided when my winter supply of food ended last week that I would clean the feeders and stop feeding the birds. Mm. Where did my birds go, and will they be okay?
I think they're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. They'll be fine. Actually, what you're doing to these birds is supplementing their diet. You're just giving them a cheap bribe. So they'll resort back to their natural food or find a neighbor. Mm-hmm. And we sure will miss you.
Within a few days, they were gone. And it's just been such a pleasure. I mean, I had a heated bird bath and, a feeder right in my kitchen window so I could see them. And then a couple of feeders out there. Spent a fortune, I might tell you, doing that.
Yes,
So it's a good time to save some money. But and within a couple of days, no birds in my backyard.
Well, you can leave a forwarding address. I'm sure they'll love to follow you.
Leave them a forwarding address.
I will do that. Thank you so much.
Irene, thanks for the call. It's Birding Today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll check the email back after the next break, but we have time for a few more calls here before then. And Jenny is in Cheshire, Massachusetts. Jenny, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for having me, for taking my call.
You betcha.
So you guys, earlier on the show, there was a brief mention of leaving the side door of a bluebird box open to deter sparrows. And of course, anybody who has been doing hosting bluebirds and has bluebird boxes knows that sparrows are really tough to deter. Mm-hmm. There's a good reason why they do so well with reproduction, at least in my estimation, having watched them now closely for about 6 years. And I just wanted to share something. So a couple things that I found helpful, and I kind of have this process that I go through, and the last resort is to trap the sparrow in the box using a Vanner trapdoor, and then I kill and dispose of the sparrow. But before I get to that, right, so I tried a couple things. One is I changed over to what's called a Gilbertson nest box, which is kind of a cool little design. And you think, like, how in the world does this work for the bluebirds? But they seem to really like it. And so you can look up Gilbertson nest box. And what I've observed is that the way that the box is designed is the entry hole is recessed between two side panels, and they're able to defend the entry to that hole extremely well, and the sparrow really can't outmaneuver the bluebird to get inside the box versus like a flat surface. So that's one thing to try. The second thing, and I've bought a lot of different kind of boxes, so the Gilbertson is seeming to work really well. Something that I tried with a flat entry box was to use, that has an overhanging roof, was to install two parallel monofilament lines that are held in place with thumbtacks on the top and bottom that are exactly the inch and an eighth, or inch and a quarter, precisely the dimension of the entry hole. And the bluebirds, they all notice it. None of them like it, but the bluebirds definitely can pick up on the lines better than the sparrows, but it's not a guarantee. I tried that before the Gilbertson box. And then the last thing, if you really have an issue with the house sparrows, is to, like, just get super serious about it and to use a Vanner trapdoor, which that in itself doesn't hurt any bird. It simply is a spring-loaded trapdoor that you install inside the face of the box. And when a bird goes in, it springs the trap and the entry hole is blocked. And then basically you have to monitor so you're not, like, leaving a bird inside of a box because you don't know what you're trapping. I never use it unless there's a house sparrow that's a problem. And then very carefully get a hold of what's inside. I use a pillowcase, or my husband, so we don't hurt the bird and don't damage its wings. And when we're 100% certain what we have is a house sparrow, we take it in our hands and we hold it in a bucket of water until it's dead. And then we feed it to the crows.
That's
or the snapping turtle.
Those are some of the tricks that I was referring to earlier when I went to the bird store. Right. All of those ideas. Plus there's some other ones where the feeders don't have a roof, and apparently the sparrows hate that.
But the bluebirds, they like the roof.
The bluebirds will still
nest. Yeah, the Peterson
nest
box.
Yep.
That seems easier than drowning them.
So there's a lot of different techniques, and I think I definitely have to try and see what works for your birds.
This Gilbertson nest box is new to me. I'll have to check it out. Thank you for that.
Jenny, thanks for that interesting and at times disturbing bit of information. Thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551. So, I mean, it's okay to kill a bird if you have to? Or did I get that wrong?
House sparrows and starlings, it's legal.
Oh, it's legal. Okay,
it's
good.
It's legal because they're not native. But for most things, it's not legal.
Okay, so she wasn't confessing anything wrong on the air. Okay, thank God
for that. And turnaround is the sparrows will readily kill the bluebird or the nestlings.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. So, and we've seen that. We have seen the battle at our house between, I think, sparrows and Carolina wrens.
House wrens will do that.
We had Phoebes. And we loved the Phoebes. And they got pushed out. Yeah. And there was a massive battle. Mm-hmm. And I was very upset for a long time. But I got over it. Let's take a break. 800. Oh, that's nice. Oh. 800-348-2551. Some happy music now. And
yay.
We'll be back. Lovely, lovely music here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. We're trying the Merlin app to see what Bird Rich looks like. And I have my money on Buzzard, but let's see what it is.
Old Buzzard would work.
Anything?
No, it's not doing it.
Darn it.
But you got a picture of me. You're the winner.
Delete immediately. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. All right, let's go to the email bag for a few. This is from Fran and Mike. Last year, we called about a Phoebe's nest that had been made and used for 2 years by the birds. We were advised to take it down because it might be filled with bugs and stuff. We were told the Phoebes would make a new one this year, but they have come and looked at the now empty flat space where they had nested and didn't stay. We miss them terribly. Why did they not make a new nest? The spot is very quiet and private.
Oh.
It's from Fran and Mike.
Oh.
There's still time. The Phoebes have just barely started to come back. So there's still plenty of time for them to decide.
And it's the male that's back now. He's out there singing his heart out, trying to attract the female. And the female is the one that builds a nest. So.
Yep.
I love Phoebes a lot.
Wait a little longer. Yeah.
Still hope. See. Okay. This is from Joe. We get flocks of white birds from a distance that come through fall and spring to the great Sacandaga Lake. Ooh. They were in a tight group in the water one day only. White pelican was all Merlin came up with. Mm-hmm. White pelican. Yeah.
Unlikely. Good old Merlin. I'm going to guess snow geese.
Snow geese, yeah. I was thinking like maybe swan of some sort if it's that big. But snow geese is a good bet. Yeah, that's good.
None. Jeffrey writes in, subject heading, famous eagles in California. Please mention Jackie and Shadow, who live in Big Bear Valley and are raising their two eaglets that were born over this past weekend. Webcam on YouTube.
I don't know them, but I will put a shout out to webcams. I've been watching one lately from New Zealand with a kakapo, which is a flightless parrot.
I thought that was a dog.
It's a flightless parrot. Anyways, they can be quite fun to watch, and you learn quite a bit about bird nesting behavior.
And here's a shout out to that pair of eagles in California.
Have you seen them?
I've seen them in California. I don't know. I didn't recognize those two.
Big Bear. Yeah, I think I said Big Beer Valley, which, what a giveaway. No, it's Big Bear Valley.
Okay.
And there you go. All right. Okay. So, Kathy, 2 weeks ago, I spotted a large brownish black figure sitting with its back to me in my neighbor's tree.
I had my coffee.
I'm telling you, it's so time to retire. I grabbed my binoculars and was stunned to see a bald eagle looking back at me.
Oh.
I live behind a nature preserve in Glenville, and I'm not far from the Mohawk River, where I know eagles have been spotted. Is this unusual? The bird sat in the tree for quite some time and was just watching the birds at my feeders. The birds did not seem afraid of the eagle. This was the first time I have seen a bald eagle this close to my house. That's from Kathy.
I'd say it's not unusual anymore. The numbers of bald eagles, particularly around this area along the Hudson and the Mohawk, have just skyrocketed, and they're everywhere now. And yeah, eagles don't usually go for the small little songbirds. So probably the birds were like, the feeder birds were like, oh, I'm safe from him.
Merely a snack.
Yeah.
I tell you, we talked about this last year. We had a beautiful bald eagle in our backyard, and we're not that close to the water.
Yep.
And it was chowing on a squirrel, or I don't know what it was, but the crows were not happy. The crows were very displeased.
And the thing about bald eagles is that there are so many of them, they've become a little overcrowded, and they are moving into the suburbs, into the backyards and neighborhoods of the suburbs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're becoming more and more accustomed to people. They're not as shy as they were in the wilder days.
All right, a couple more emails here, and then we're going to go right back to the phones. Bird Island. Says somebody who doesn't have a name. Are your experts familiar with Bird Island, located off the coast of Cape Breton, Nova Scotia? Took a boat tour. Visitors not allowed on the island, but it's a fascinating place to visit.
I've heard of it. And yeah. There's Cape Sable Island, which is way off the coast of Nova Scotia. That is a bird island. They have a special subspecies of the Savannah sparrow that is found only there. And there are other bird islands. I thought perhaps you were talking about the one off South America, but
or the one in Scotland.
Yeah, the one is that. So they are around.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, this one last email: drowning house sparrow. This is from Joe. It's much more humane to do a cervical fracture. I believe that's what the DEC uses on pests in landfills, or they gas them. Is that true?
It is. Yeah, you can. Yeah, that's okay. The best way to kill birds.
All right, enough talk about death. Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. Anitra is in Ellenville. Anitra, you're on.
Hi. So I have a comment and a question. The comment is that on Facebook the other day, I saw a post about an owl that had been injured and had to be euthanized because the people brought down a tree. And she was nesting, and I hadn't even, and they were like, don't bring down your trees this time of year. So I was wondering what the window of time is on that, if you could give us some guidance. And also, I live on the Shongum Ridge, and I have quite a few dead trees that need to come down. I know we have woodpeckers. I mean, some of them have to come down because they're near a structure, but you know, I think also wildlife likes them. So I wondered if you could give me any guidance on ones to leave up. Like if it already has a bunch of holes in it, should you like leave it up? Or if it's not going to harm anything if it falls or if it's a certain type. Like I have dead hemlock, oak, white pine.
All right.
I think that's it.
Julie, what do you think?
I would say if there's no structures or people that might be harmed if the tree fell, I would leave it up because as you said, it's really good for the wildlife. There's a lot of birds and other mammals and insects that are going to use those trees. So if you can, I would leave them up. But if they're near your house, then you need to take them down.
Rich,
yeah, I would say so as well. Much as I like those wild condos, the wildlife condos out there, safety first. But do monitor if you do that. Take a tree down. Watch and see if there's any disruption, displacements, and have the nearby bird rehabilitator's phone number on your Rolodex.
All right.
And in terms of time of year, she asked as well. Fall is probably the best time. That's when there's not likely to be anyone nesting. So like September to November. So,
Then you have to worry about the long-eared bat.
Yes, true. Yes, sorry.
Which overwinters in dead trees like that, which is an endangered species.
Yes.
But you can monitor that. And if you have other dead trees nearby, they'll relocate easily.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Boyd's today. Richard is in Rensselaer. Richard.
Yes, I have a recording. I hope you can tell me if it's a bird or not and what kind.
Cool. Let's go.
Well, it sounds like a bad recording of a Carolina wren, but...
Sounds like a chimp.
Or a rail?
Yeah, well, It could be, was that day or night, by the way?
It was at night, and it was up in a tree.
Uh-huh.
Up in a tree.
Okay. Oh. I'm mystified.
Irritated raccoon?
I was going to say, what about raccoon or skunk or something?
Yeah.
I'm in. Raccoon?
Will skunks go up in trees?
I have not seen a skunk go up a tree.
No?
No, you're right. And porcupines but
I'm sure they will. I mean, they have to. Like
that's
a cat,
cool.
But yeah.
Yeah.
But I like skunks.
So I don't know, Richard. Do you guys want to say anything else?
Try, see if you could get it again sometime. When was that, by the way?
It's about 10 at night.
What time of year?
Oh, like 5 days ago.
Okay.
All right.
I mean, you could email it to us too. I wonder how much of it's getting distorted over the radio. So you could email it to us. Well,
cool.
Interstate 787's in the background too. Fix that.
Well, work on that. There's your mystery for us, and then bring it back to us.
That's great. Yeah, I'd love to. Love to get a follow-up.
I'd love to solve that. Sure. I like these night sounds.
Richard, thanks a lot. 800-348-2551. Cindy's in Chatham. Hello, Cindy. You're on.
Hi, I'm calling. A couple weeks ago, we had well over 100 robins in our backyard dancing around. And I'm just curious what the explanation might be for that, whether we were on the migratory path and just a bunch of them happened to stop there, or what might be going on.
Your guess is good. That's exactly it. They migrate in flocks, mm-hmm. and they feed in company, and they move on. Once they get to the nest territory, the welcome mat is pulled in.
It's pretty common this time of year to see these big flocks like that, and they just show up and they're like there for a day and then they're gone. Yeah,
it's kind of cool though.
It is cool. Yeah,
you get them for one
spring
day.
They clean up those grubs that are in your yard. So
and the worms. Yeah. And,
all right, Cindy, you want to follow up?
Nope. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. Now listen, Fran, who's a regular correspondent on this program and a wonderful mm-hmm. human being. Says, I can't believe that killing birds is being discussed and condoned. I don't think anybody condoned it, right?
No.
Fran says, don't we have enough cruelty? There has to be more humane ways to deal with unwanted sparrows. We have them too, but we would never be cruel. Very disappointed in you guys for treating the subject the way you did.
We did try to clarify that there's only, for most species, it's not legal
to
be killing birds, right? So it's illegal for most things. There's a few that are these introduced species. They're not native to North America.
Why were they introduced again? Why?
Some nuts thought it was a good idea.
Yeah. They wanted to make it sound more like England.
The same ones who brought the Japanese knotweed to my neighborhood that you can't get rid of.
Yeah.
All right.
And I would agree, like, killing would be a last resort.
I mean,
and
if there aren't two people who love birds more than you two, I don't know, you know.
I can never bring myself to kill anything. I've never done it, so.
All right. Fair enough. All right, Fran. Thanks for the email. Laura's in Bennington. Laura, you're on.
Oh, wow.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Sure, go ahead.
I love it.
Can you hear? Oh, wow, this is exciting. So the deer park in Bennington has a lot of ducks, mallards, like a couple hundred. But this year, there's three ducks that I haven't been able to find them when I look it up. The male looks just like the mallards, only it's big. And the females are like, two females with kind of big gray bodies and white chests. And they're big and fluffy. Were you able to hear me?
Oh, yes.
So what those...
So what do you think?
Well, those are offspring of domesticated mallards through generations of inbreeding and selection. They become the barnyard duck of the neighborhood. And, people raise them. They buy the eggs. They raise them in their backyard. And then they feel like they should liberate them, and they bring them to a park nearby. And they show up at duck ponds in the park.
Aha.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Well, they are getting fed because we have a lot of duck feeders at our ponds there. Yeah. So, yeah, they get fed every day by a few people coming. Well, thank you. Yeah. I was wondering, oh, I had to burn my dryer duct this morning. That's just a side. I had to get the ladder out and stuff it with screening. Anyway,
starlings.
That's all. Oh, good for you. Good job.
Hey, Laura, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Saratoga Springs. Brian is waiting to talk. Hello, Brian.
Hey, gang.
What's up?
I got a bird where I live in recent years. I'm not a birder, and it makes this call. It's very unique, and it's just one bird. I'm going to attempt to do the call.
Love it.
Try not to laugh, Ray.
No, I'm not. No.
And maybe you guys can identify it. Okay, so here it goes.
Here we go.
Beep-boo, 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 beep.
All right, I'm not going to laugh. But
I'm exempt. You didn't ask me not to.
All right. Do you know what it is, Rich?
I'm going to say it's a tufted titmouse or a Carolina wren.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking Carolina wren.
This bird is by himself. Yeah. I've lived here 28 years. It's probably been since COVID. It's just one. But, boy, he does that call all day.
Can you do it again, Brian?
Yeah, I'll do it again.
Yeah. I won't laugh.
I know you want to laugh.
No, all right. No, I'm not going to laugh.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Beep-boo, 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 beep.
I can't help myself.
Sorry,
man. Sorry. It was great, though. Hey, Rich, I bet you could do that sound,
and can you say? Can you tell me the birds once again, what you think it is?
I'm going to go with Julia's nodding her head profusely here, and I'm going to go with the Carolina wren.
Yeah, Carolina wren.
Carolina wren.
And they got a wonderful song, and you do it really good.
No, come on, Rich. You can do it, too.
Ray, before I go, please get Tony Levin back.
Hey, I'll ask him. You know, he's a pretty busy guy, but thank you, Brian.
All right, well, please, thank you. Thank you. This bird is, I'm not a birder, but, you know, I know cardinals and I know some, but I just can't, I've never heard this bird. I grew up in this area. Are they prevalent in this area?
They just moved in. They're a southern bird. Yeah. The name Carolina.
Okay.
But, hey, you're a birder
now.
Are
they solitary? Because it's just one. It's always just one. Are they solitary?
No, his sweetheart is out there somewhere.
I mean, if you sounded like that, would people be hanging around, Brian? I mean, let's face it.
Fair enough, Ray.
Hey,
fair
man,
enough. I'll let you guys go.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's quickly go to Gloversville and John. Hello, John.
Hi, thank you. I was just wondering, a couple of years ago, I noticed when I was outside with my granddaughter waiting for the school bus, she had her head tilted back, and right about 6 inches above her was one of the branches on the pine tree, and was this pretty bird just sitting there. It was just didn't fly away, didn't anything. She walked a little closer, had her head tilted back, and I took a picture with a little knitted hat on top. She looked so pretty, and I was wondering if there's some people that have a scent or something, the birds are not afraid of them.
That's not it, but and you say it was your daughter?
My granddaughter.
Your granddaughter.
She was about 6 or 7 at the time.
Well,
they live in the town out in the country, and butterflies seem to follow her around sometimes.
Well, I think certain people have a wonderful aura, and I'm going to give that to your granddaughter.
Okay.
Well, you know,
I think
go ahead,
you know, I do think that, you know, certain personalities tend to attract wildlife more, because if you're quiet and you're calm, you're not making sudden movements, those kinds of things, then the wildlife are less afraid of you.
Interesting.
So
it builds trust.
I mean, that's why the birds sit on Rich's head. He's very welcoming.
Those are usually woodpeckers.
Ah, all right. Well, thank you, Rich, and thank you, Julie. We appreciate the time that you put in. It was
thank
a little
you.
Dark at times on the program here today, and we'll hope for something a little more light, a little more levity next time that doesn't involve a killing. Support comes from Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting a Zoom panel discussion of the film Odette, April 12th. That's April, singular. April 12th at 7 p.m. sjca.sjcf@gmail.com for registration. And Cow Pots and Freund's Farm Market, Connecticut farm families striving to create a sustainable alternative and future by turning composted cow manure into renewable and biodegradable pots for gardens, cowpots.com. Okay, that's one. That was one for the books. Thanks to Mike Bowen, our engineer. Barb King screened the calls. Rich Guthrie is here. Julie Hart is here. We're going to usher them out of the building now, but they'll be back next month. Tomorrow, we talk climate change and emerging clean energy tech with Dan DeLore. That's tomorrow at 2 p.m. I'm Ray Graff. All right, everybody, just calm down. We'll see you tomorrow.